Tvayetadascharyamajatamayaya. Vinirmitam patiguna trayatmakam. Tatapyaham yoshad atatva vichchate. Dinadidrikshe bhavame bhavakshitim. Twayi, in you, etat, this, ascharyam, wonderful, aja, O Lord Shiva, atma mayaya, by the external energy of the Supreme Lord, vinirmitam, created, bhati, appears, gunatraya atmakam, being an interaction of the three modes of material nature, tata api, even so, aham, I, yoshid, woman, atma, atatvavit, not conversant with the truth. Cha, and, te, your, dina, poor, didirikshe, I wish to see, bhava, O Lord Shiva, me, my, bhavakshitim, place of birth. Translation. This manifested cosmos is a wonderful creation of the interaction of the three material modes, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. This truth is fully known to you, yet I am but a poor woman, and as you know, I am not conversant with the truth. Therefore, I wish to see my birthplace once more. Purport. Dakshayani Sati knew very well that her husband, Lord Shiva, was not very much interested in the glaring manifestation of the material world, which is caused by the interaction of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, she addressed her husband as Aja, which refers to one who has transcended the bondage of birth and death, or one who has realized his eternal position. She stated, the illusion of accepting the perverted reflection, the material or causal manifestation, to be real is not present in you, because you are self-realized. For you, the attraction of social life and the consideration that someone is father, someone is mother, and someone is sister, which are illusory relationships, is already over. But because I am a poor woman, I am not so advanced in transcendental realization. Therefore, naturally, these appear to me as real. Only less intelligent persons accept this perverted reflection of the spiritual world to be real. Those who are under the spell of the external energy accept this manifestation to be fact, whereas those who are advanced in spiritual realization know that it is illusion. Actual reality is elsewhere in the spiritual world. But as far as I am concerned, Sati said, I do not have much knowledge about self-realization. I am poor because I do not know the actual facts. I am attracted by my birthplace, and I want to see it. One who has attraction for his birthplace, for his body, and for other such items mentioned in the Bhagavatam is considered to be like an ass or a cow. Sati might have heard all this many times from her husband, Lord Shiva, but because she was a woman, Yoshit, she still hankered after the same immaterial objects of affection. The word Yoshit means one who is enjoyed. Therefore, woman is called Yoshit. In spiritual advancement, association with Yoshit is always restricted, but because if one is like a play doll in the hands of Yoshit, then all his spiritual advancement is at once stopped. It is said, those who are just like playthings in the hands of a woman, Yoshit Krida Mrigeshu, cannot make any advancement in spiritual realization. So in dealing with these, with anything actually, but especially when dealing with the scriptures, then it's always very important to be able to understand the various levels that one is dealing with within the scriptures. That one is going to be dealing with the gross, with the subtle, and with the state of consciousness. So all these aspects must be seen very clearly. And that balance then actually gives one a real understanding. Otherwise, what will happen is one will simply take the observable, meaning the gross, and that will be considered the complete picture. But people only engage in activities that are perceivable based on their mood. That means what it is that's important to them, or what rules and regulations they have accepted in their life. Whatever it may be, everybody accepts something, right? I mean, in other words, the principle of religion means what is the inherent nature, right? So now one can either take what is actually the real inherent nature, or one can create one. You know, like let's say punk kids in high school. So then they have their own idea of what is culture, what's right, what are the proper rules and regulations to be followed. And because of that, then you see a manifestation in a particular way. How they act, walk, dress, everything. They have something. You can go up and say, is this proper clothes? And they can say yes or no. It's very subtle. How do you tell that, okay, the chain has an extra 5 links in it, so now that's so yesterday. You know, and now they use the shorter one, and now they use the longer one. Or, you know, how it's connected onto your pants. You know, so these are rules that they have, and they're very strict rules. One may say, no, we're being modern, being ourselves, being liberal. These rules are so strict that if you don't get them right, you can either be laughed at or beaten up or neglected, something very drastic. So that's the point. Or you follow tradition, whatever your local tradition, you follow something from religion. You know, like that's some world religion, or you can follow the Vedas. In any case, you're going to choose something by which the external is going to be manifest. And that will be based on your specific, particular underlying attachments that you have. Right? What is your value system, the manifest value system that is there from your consciousness that of I am the controller and enjoyer? Right, so I'm the controller and enjoyer, that manifests in a particular way. I am this kind of controller, so I enjoy in this way. Right? That will then influence the rules and regulations that you accept in your life, and therefore you'll finally get the external manifestation. So we can see if we're only seeing the external manifestation, we're missing most of what's going on. So it's very important to understand that, because when one approaches the scriptures, one has to know what is the underlying principle of why I'm accepting or rejecting what's here, why I'm applying it in a particular way, what is the consciousness. With that, then very nicely one can approach the, you know, the directions of the scriptures, the instruction of the spiritual master. Otherwise, then it will fall into one's mundane perspective, one's mundane usage, which is not actually very useful, right? Going back to Godhead means eternal. It's an eternal position. So that means to get there, one has to act on the eternal position. If one simply acts on the external, that is not good. So in other words, the scriptures are saying there's two paths, the external and the internal. The external means you start with what we discussed before, all the internal. You have your consciousness, you have your underlying value system, you have your source of rules and regulations, but through that you come to the external, which is your goal. And that's what you see, that is what you see as final. Right? Internal means may start with that. You deal with the external, but from the dealings of the external, you'll contemplate it in connection with those subtle points of the internal. From what you see, then, well, what is the religious principle? What is the motivation behind that? What is the consciousness? And in this way, then one can contemplate and come to the position where one is actually trying to engage one's external interactions in connection with the Lord. So with that, then one can approach, you know, in a balanced way, these verses, or any of these kind of verses. Because sati is then, you know, overwhelmed with, you know, the affection for family, that interaction, all these different things. That's the feminine nature, right? The difficulty is because she is external potency, right? Then that is going to be in connection more with the external of the birth, the relatives, the families, the interaction. So in this way, she's saying that's less intelligent because internal potency is more intelligent, right? But in here, the point is the feminine nature is going to experience. It's going to deal with relationship in a experiential way. The relationship must be able to be experienced. If it's not able to be experienced, it doesn't mean anything to the feminine nature. So, the point is since she's the external energy, she's going to deal with it in this way. It's a manifestation of her. Just like, you can say, well, she's mature. How will she be? It's like, how are you overwhelmed by your arm? You know, you get something wrong with your arm and you're so absorbed in it. Is that a problem? Does anybody think that's strange? No. So then why would it be strange that Maya is absorbed in her own manifestation? It's her. So, because of this, is less intelligent. Why? Because spiritual is more intelligent than material. So it's inherent. So that she's saying Shiva's intelligent because stepping away from the, dynamic, interactive, experiential relationships, the masculine element can do that. And step away and just go, this is external, this is Maya. This is the modes of nature. It's not the spiritual nature. We see the difference here? Means, in other words, that position, it's not experiencing anything. It's not experiencing the spiritual world, and it's not experiencing the material world. It's just seeing the two. This is the difference in capacity of the masculine and feminine nature. It's for this reason that the masculine is considered more intelligent, the feminine is considered less intelligent. This point. Right? We don't see it here that she's talking about how she's, you know, in decorating and how she's going to do things and how she's controlling the living entities and all that. She's quite smart. We're talking the difference between going from the experiential platform to the pure intellectual platform. That, on the feminine platform, is not possible. It doesn't work. One can see, but then it's experiencing the spiritual. One can say, oh, this material, the attachments are so there, but one is experiencing that higher interaction and attachment. That's the switch. It's not intellectual. It may be expressed through intelligence, but one is describing a superior experience. Subtle, but important. It means if you want to know how to deal with energy, then this is important. Otherwise, why is she saying? Well, she's saying the festival. She's mentioned many things. What is she mentioning? She's mentioning relatives. Right, who you have a natural bond with, a natural identity with. Only with identity can you have interaction. And only from interaction is there experience. So relations means automatic identity, therefore automatic interaction and experience. Right? First thing mentioned. Then she's mentioning about the situation. I mean, of course, and that then, what are they doing? They're dressing up, ornamenting themselves, talking about this and that, the affection. It's not that they're talking about specifically the yajna and all that, but just interacting. It's an opportunity to interact. Vedic culture creates the opportunities to interact, right? Just like darshanarti, right? Half what's going on is the devotion to the deities, half of what's going on is interaction with your friends and other people like that, and who's dressing what and dressing up and all this and that. And I'm trying to be liberal here by saying it's half-half, okay? So does that make sense? So like this, the Vedic culture has all these different things in it to give that opportunity, because it's an essential element. And then it is connected to Krishna. So all that social interaction, dressing up, is all connected with going to darshan for the deities. So one is purified. So of course, the more one is absorbed in the darshan, the quicker the process, the less one is, and more social it is, the slower the process. But the reason you're there is because it is darshanarti. You're standing in front of the deities, seeing and appreciating. I don't think anybody's simply dressing up, coming in, only interacting with friends and not even noticing the deity. Right? You know, that's, you know, just so, you know, archaic, you know, it's just, you know, that's so last millennium, you know, like that kind of thing. You know, but it's going on. Right? The devotional is going on, but it's mixed with these things. So it gives the opportunity that someone who's more absorbed in the material still has an equal opportunity as someone who is more absorbed in the spiritual or the devotional. Right? It's the same ritual. That's the superiority of the Vedic rituals. They can accommodate everything. Right? So that's why it's recommended, all these festivals, things happening, because it gives more and more opportunity for people to interact. Right. So that's the next thing. Then we see after that is then, so it's the whole thing is interaction, not just to dress up to dress up, it's to dress up to interact. Right? It's not just to be cool and all that. Like, the girls dress up, it's things that are attractive to men, right? But it's to interact with the other ladies, because most of the time the men don't even notice that it's, you know, different sari put on differently or how you did this and that. They don't necessarily catch. You know, if they're a little trained, then they go, oh, that looks nice. But if you say, what's different? They wouldn't know. Or, why is it nice? Or, you're just saying that. Then it's kind of like, okay, now what am I supposed to say? You know, like that. So, it's subtle. So, the women appreciate it. So, they're the ones that you can interact. Therefore, the sisters, mothers-in-law, all these different things like this. You know? So, then, the other is the situation. That is, but you see, it's a relationship. Well, men, you see, they'll dress up, and they think it's cool, right? And they think that they're very attractive. The women think it's stupid, right? Very, very common that what men call as fashion amongst men, you know, the man's man and all, the women really think it's stupid, right? That's the difference. What women dress up and they say, I look good, the men also say, that looks good. But it may not be specifically for the men because they won't notice it anyway. But the men are dressing up thinking that the women think this is really cool. And they're all telling, yeah, that look, hey, that's, you know, like this. But the women really think that is really, really stupid. You know? Like that. Whatever it is. I will try to avoid any examples here and stuff like that. But I'm sure if you contemplate them, you'll find, you know, like that. So we see is that it's based on relationship. The man, it's not so dynamic. The woman, it is. The man has to go out of his way to make it dynamic. The woman doesn't. It's automatic. So the man who will take that step, go out of his way, that's special. Women appreciate that. The man who's just being himself and all that, that's nice. He's a man, but it's not interactive. There's nothing much there for women. Right? So we see here there's a difference here, right? We have to see. Then she's talking about the flags. The flags are flags. So the situation is something's going on, it's special, right? Not, flags aren't there just all the time. They're there for a festival. They move. They do like that. You have a flag and a flagpole, right? So what is the masculine element? What's the feminine element? Right? The flagpole is the masculine. It's the stable, the steady, the constant. And the flag itself is the feminine, right? It's feminine, it's interacting with the air, which is feminine, the movement of the air, right? So all those kind of things, the feminine, so that whole thing of going there, interacting with their mother and sisters and sisters-in-laws and mothers-in-law, that's the whole, it's the same principle, That's why all these things are there. It's a thing. The senses, the sense. So wait, does that make some sense? Right? In other words, the situation matches the relationships that are going to be happening. Right? And because it's her place, it's where she's from, then this all goes on nicely, as that we mentioned as in the first. So she's saying that this cosmic manifestation, you know, it's like that. So it's wonderful. Wonderful meaning it's amazing that you can never actually fully understand it. Something's wonderful because you can't fully understand it. Right? If you fully understand it, you don't call it wonderful. Right? It's those parts you don't understand that are that attract one, you call that wonderful. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. You don't say this is wonderful. You know, it's what you can do with that, and that you go, well, that's wonderful. So she's saying this manifestation is wonderful because there's so much that's not understood. Right? So the men don't have to worry. If you don't understand women, that's fine. Women don't understand women, as is being said here, by the external energy yourself. Right? So you don't have to feel that you're alone or there's a problem. Right? It's just no one understands. Because if it was understood, where's the fun? Right? It's not wonderful anymore. It doesn't have that attraction and all that. So we see is that all this is happening. So she's saying is, I am who I am, so therefore I am absorbed in all these, but you are who you are. And so you can give some solution, right? How we can deal with this in such a way that the needs are there, how to transfer it, how to do all these different things. Right? How to deal with this situation. That's the thing, you know, that he can do. She can't. She can only experience it. Right? Try to do what's the best thing, what's the right thing, but not. Oh, last one you mentioned is like the sacrifice. Because it's religious. You perform a ritual, you get a result. That result is able to be dealt with. You're able to get an experience from it. Therefore, rituals are very important to women. Right? So those rituals, they feel that the result gotten, or that there will be a result, then it's important. If they don't understand there will be a result or what it's for, then that's not there. So it's by training, then the woman will be religious or not. Right? So with training, she'll be religious. With training, the man will be spiritual. He'll be able to tell the difference between material experience and spiritual experience. Like that. And then he can give that experience, those create those situations in which the feminine nature can get the spiritual experience. Right? So here it is now, down here at the bottom, then Prabhupada's giving the this part of Yoshi, one who is enjoyed. But we notice that in the principle of one who is enjoyed, then that immediately comes up with, yes, one is enjoyed, the submission.
Krishna has predicted how many desires, which specific desires the human beings, the living entities will have. And there are so many things in the material world, so many species. Because, like, is there a number of material desires or...
A number of material
desires? Yes, because there's 8,400,000.
It's basically, I mean, you can boil it all down to eating, sleeping, mating, defending, basically. And everything else would be subdivisions of that. You know, what experiences you may get in these, that would be your differences of there. But all the qualities, all the emotions and that they talk about. But you see, it's mentioned there, desire for, you know, the place of birth, you know, one's home, relatives, wealth, furniture, social status, position, children, varieties of sense enjoyment, clothes.
These 8,400,000. There is no more than that. I mean, there is no living entities falling from the spiritual world or even here that they have another desire.
They have a different desire than that. No, because it's all the same. It's the living entity is a living entity. It's just a matter of where he's being the living entity. Like, do your desires change in general if you're home or you're down at the bus station? You know what I'm saying? Specifics may change, you know, the bus station, so you go over to the vending machine and get something to eat, and if you're at home, you go to the refrigerator. Right? But this basic principle is the same. You're still the same person. You may externally manifest a little bit differently this way and that way for the situation, right? So the living entity, you know, dealing in rasa, that you interact on the platform of you know, 5 primary rasas and 7 secondary rasas, that's just standard. That's the way it is. It's just a matter of, at any one particular time, what's prominent or, you know, what's more important, and that's all. That's why it said chewing the chew. It's the same old stuff. Right? But, the secondary point is to make us disinterested in the material world. The primary point is to switch our attention to the spiritual world. Right? So we see is that Prabhupada will talk about the spiritual, you know, that platform, and then he'll give the negative, or negative, it'll be balanced. If someone just talks about how bad the material world is and doesn't give how nice the spiritual world is, the point is not to become detached from the material world, the point is to become attached to the spiritual world. To do that, you have to become detached from the material world, right? If my glass is full of ink, I can't fill it up with milk. Right? And if I say, well, I want to keep some of the ink, the milk will still be black. So I have to throw out the ink, wash the glass, then I can put in milk, and then it's nice. So, but the point is to get milk in the glass, not to get rid of the ink. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say I'm cooking potatoes. The point is to get something to eat, not to get potatoes washed and peeled. You understand? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the negative is there only because of its support of the positive. But the negative doesn't stand on its own. We only put so much emphasis on the negative because of our attachment actually to the negative. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
So basically, 8,400,000
species of life, yes, that's it.
Desires to be
8 million, yeah, these basic concepts of how you want to eat, sleep, mate, and defend.
Desires to be separate from Krishna.
Desires to be separate from Krishna, but one's separate from Krishna means, in other words, one's separate from Krishna, yes, because one's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is separate from Krishna. Try. In other words, the principle is, it's not that there's 8,400,000 ways that that's completely different ways to stay away from Krishna. These are details of how we want to control and enjoy Krishna's energy. Right? You understand? That's the point. The consciousness is polluted. Right? So because the consciousness is polluted, we want to control and enjoy Krishna's energy for ourselves rather than for Krishna. Right? So then you can have 8,400,000 species of life, how to manifest that control and enjoyment. So that's the point. It comes back down to that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the 8,400,000 is variety within the principle of control and enjoy. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, so that makes it easy. You only have to deal with two things. So it doesn't matter what species you're in. You only have to deal with control and enjoyment. Right? Otherwise, it looks like, well, I have to conquer 8,400,000 kinds of desires. No. Those manifest according to, at the present moment, how you're interested to control and how you're interested to enjoy. Therefore, you get that species. So that's the principle one's trying to do, is that we don't worry about those. We worry about, we're in human life. So how does a human being, what does a human being do as human activities, right? So human being is meant for God realization, so that means whatever the activities, they're connected to God. Now a human being does these activities that you can connect to God. You know what I'm saying? Like monkeys swing from tree to tree, okay. So if they're God conscious, they can do that for Krishna. But we don't think, well, I can do that because we don't do that. Right? So we have what activities we do that we can do those for Krishna. So then we focus on that. We don't really have to worry about the other species. Other than if we have a cow, how to engage a cow in Krishna's service.
All right, well, thank you for the class.
Oh, okay.
But I was just wondering a little bit about the difference between like a a male and a female and their mentalities. I was at a class, I know, some years ago, and one Mataji asked this sannyasi, like, why we couldn't start a Brahmacharini ashram at the temple. And he said because that women make advancement by being attached, and men make advancement by being detached. So those were like the two differences.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know if you could comment on that, because I'd never heard that before until that time.
Yeah, it means, in other words, women are comfortable in an environment of, woman means opulence, right? When we say Krishna in his potency, we mean when he's Bhagavan, means he's manifest or expanding his opulence. So opulence is feminine. So the feminine nature is comfortable in an environment of opulence, whatever that may be. You know, like you live in the desert, so opulence is dried fruit. So therefore, when there's a festival, you know, the ladies of the house expect the men will bring home dried fruit. You know, whatever the opulence is, it's just that's what is comfortable. Because in opulence, when you have opulence, you can have interaction. Right, because opulence automatically means facility. But it's facility in relationship. You understand? So it's still within relationship. Because you can have the principle of that you can deal with relationships without actually dealing with opulence. But that's a masculine principle. You know, in tattva you can deal just with what's there, and it's not a matter of opulence. It's just facts. Right? But a woman will deal with all those facts in connection with relationship. In other words, what is the potential of interaction and experience that you can gain from that situation? Right? The man wants the house because it'll, you know, for protection and all those things. Woman wants the house because it's the field of interaction. If you have a house, then, you know, there is the element of safety. Right, but that's safety of relationships. It's safe, right? For I know that, you know, the dogs are going to walk off with my baby, you know, because I can lock the door. So the relationship is there. I want to have, let's say, guests over. So therefore, the facility I need for it, I can keep in the house. It would be safe. And anytime I want, I can invite people over and experience that interaction. The man doesn't think like that so much. He thinks of efficiency of getting something done. So if he does like parties, then he'll look at it, okay, well, this room, and then we, you know, our parties are generally, we like to keep them small, so it shouldn't be too big like that. Or we like big parties, therefore they buy a house with a ballroom in it, you know, like that. So it's efficiency of it. Women, the efficiency is the interaction, the experience. Well, the man is, the experience is how effective it is. And for the woman, how effective it is what experience it gets. You understand? So they're dealing with the same things, but it's always opposite. That's why there's a compatibility. But unless one knows, it can be, it's always a fight. You know, that's why chivalry is a natural, inherent quality of the conjugal rasa. Because the field's the same, but the approach to it is always the opposite. So, you know, which one's superior? You know what I'm saying? The experiential thing, oh, you're just all dry and all that and don't care and just trying to get things done, get through the evening and that. And says, no, I'm just trying to create the environment so that everybody's happy. You know, understand? Like that. It's always, that's the nature. That's why it's like what it is, because you're dealing with the most clear, obvious manifestation of, or the most intense and fullest manifestation of the masculine and feminine principle. So there's always going to be that difference. And then, because control, for a relationship there must be control to enjoy. So therefore each one is trying to control to enjoy the relationship. So chivalry is automatic. You know? So this idea of, you know, the man is thinking the wife should always be submissive and nice, but if she is, then he gets bored. But if she's not, then he's always complaining. Like this, you know, she's always this. But if she wasn't, he'd be bored. You know, in other words, because she's always
complaining, creating all this, and he's down at the pub talking with his friends. You understand? And complaining about it. If she was always nice and never perfect like that, he'd be down at the pub checking out the barmaid, not grumbling with his friends. So that's the point. It's inherent. So these things have to be understood. So that's if one understands that, then one always takes it in the proper way. That any kind of disagreement, it's a disagreement within relationship. It's not actually a disagreement is it black colored, or does it weigh 5 kilos, or is it smooth, or no, that's not the argument. The words may be, but that's not the argument. The argument's a relationship. The man gets it down to the nuts and bolts and argues over that. But when he does that, he's not talking in relationship. So he's on his own and the woman's on her own. But her argument includes the man. If it didn't, why would she bother, right? Women are lazy by nature. They're not going to waste their time arguing with somebody they don't want to have a relationship with. You know, that's how it's told. It's like, you know, the girl comes in and her friends come over, and then she's always grumbling about this guy. This guy's such a nonsense, always harasses me and this and that, you know, such a, you know, like this and that, and goes on and on and on. Then the other girls go, you really like this guy, huh? Like that. And, yeah, I don't know. Like that. You don't think, wow, she must not know. Because otherwise, why would she talk? You know, why is the guy complaining to his friends about his wife? Because she means something. Otherwise, why will you talk about sports? Forget about it. That's the women that they are annoyed about it, but it's what they can't relate to is when the men get together and it's only men and there's no women involved, and so that's why they stay away. You know, it's like the women are sitting there, the men are sitting there, and then something comes up about something about sports and all that. You know, they're talking about the excitement of it or this or that, and the men get into it. Yeah, this player did this and that one did that. Yeah, I don't know, that guy's really stupid. This, and then you see the women just kind of get up and disappear from the conversation. And then the men wonder kind of why. Because it became a man's conversation. There is no relationship there. It's efficiency of pointing out things, finding things, you know, the variety of ways you can look at it. Like this, which is a taste for men, because that's how intelligence works. But for women, there's no taste at all. Therefore, they get up and go, you know, into the kitchen and find something else to do, you know, like that. Talk about the cake or something, you know. It's like, you know. Right? You know. Does that make sense? So it's important, these elements. So here's what we meant is when we said lazy, because then one might come back in a few years, someone says, I heard this once, Sannyasi said women are lazy, but now you're saying that they're actually active and men are lazy. So just that means anything outside of relationship, they're lazy. Right? Men will get into something just because it's what you're supposed to do. It's something that can be done. You know, why did he put a rocket engine on his motorcycle? Right? You know, the woman, you know, would be, you know, because of the feeling or the this, the that, or so many things like that, or the prestige of no one else has done it. Man is like, because it can be done, right? You know, it's an option, you know, so it's a mathematical option, therefore, let's do it, you know, like that. You know, when he kills himself, it's not an option anymore, so therefore he can't do it. So that's why you see he doesn't put another rocket engine on his motorcycle, because he's dead. You know, so like that, then women are opulence. They, in that environment, man can deal with opulence as facts and figures. Women never do. So the opulence is there is something that you can get an experience from, and it goes back to the position of relationship or sambandha, in that it's opportunities for interaction. Right? So that's the thing. Things are an opportunity for our interaction with a woman, for a woman. Right? Things are, for men, something that gets something efficiently done. Of course, you're interacting, but you're interacting just on the fact of interaction. It's on the Brahman platform. It's not actually on the personal platform, the Bhagavan platform. Does that make sense? So, therefore, for women to live in the temple as they are conceived today, it doesn't work so good. Brahmacharini ashrams don't last so long, they don't know and last there. They actually wanted to make a Brahmacharini ashram where women could stay comfortably and get trained. Then they would have to make it like a house. In other words, stop trying to make it like what the brahmacharis have. How the brahmacharis have it, that's the way the brahmacharis should have it, and no one should say otherwise. Right? But the women, it should be nice. Nice furniture, pillows, you know, curtains, nice things. It's clean, it's fragrant. They have their own rooms, tons of bathrooms and stuff like this. Lots of facility, comfortable, never a problem. Ways that they can get away from each other. You know, and they could go all day without seeing one of the other girls if they really felt like it. At the same time, they can live their life. They can still take their bath, get something to eat. So, you know, it sounds like a tall order. If you want a brahmacharini ashrama work, that's what you need. You know, and then they'll be able to stay how long they actually need to stay. They won't leave because they want to get out of there. In other words, when they're trained, then they'll turn their attention to getting married. Rather than getting married as a way to get out of the brahmacharini ashram. Because if the woman didn't have a good experience in the temple, she's not necessarily, when she finds her man and moves out of the temple, going to be so enthusiastic about her and her husband coming to that temple. And therefore she's got other things to do. Right? Because going to the temple reminds her of how it wasn't a nice experience. You know, unless it was, you know, like, you know, the temple program and the other things, interacting with the devotees were great, but the facilities were just so bad they couldn't handle it. Then they'll go for the programs, but then, you know what I'm saying. But if it was more overall, that, you know, how they dealt and this and that and all that, then you'll find they don't want to come around. And if the husband is actually going to be interactive, he can't either. Or he's got to just come to the temple anyway, and then he risks everything falling apart. So it's difficult. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's a lot of... You want to have a brahmacharini ashram, it's more expensive than the brahmachari ashram. Of course, brahmacharinis generally bring in much more money than the men. But then it has to be reinvested. In other words, they bring in more, give them more facilities. Men, even if they make more, they don't need more facilities. You know, just it should be when you turn the knob on the shower, the water does come out of the shower. You know, like that. And it's enough water you can actually take a shower, right? And the floor actually is not broken, so you fall in and sprain your ankle. It's hard to do sankirtan with a sprained ankle. You know, so like that. But the women, it should be nice, you know, beautiful, attractive. You know, even though it's a common showers, it should look like a home bathroom. You know what I'm saying? And if that's the thing, you can relate to that, then you can have a nice brahmacharini ashram. You can't relate to that, then don't bother. But still, create a facility for those ladies who come to the temple, that they have an area in the temple they can kind of get away and go to. They have their own bathrooms and stuff. They don't have to share it with all the other brahmacharis who, you know, aren't so considered about how they use these kind of facilities. So it's just the natural environment, because as we said, the intelligence, the field of intelligence in this case of the Atmarama is austere, because it's just dealing with facts and figures. So it's mechanical, and so the more clear the mechanics, the more regulated the mechanics, that you don't have to worry, like you don't have to worry about getting up, taking a bath, where your toothbrush is, this, that. It's in the same place, in the same bag for the last 10 years. And in fact, when your bag wears out, you're really disappointed that they don't make that bag anymore. Right? But the woman, after 6 months, even though it's a fabulous Gucci bag, she wants another one. Because, you know, that's last, we already used that for 6 months. You know what I'm saying? So it's a problem. Right? It's just like, you know, you think back before, it was what you had, allspice and menin, right? And that was it. And they were the same smell and had been the same smell for 50 years, right? But if you went into the perfume section, right? Because even though it's perfect, still, after 6 months, you have to have a new one. So man looks for something that works like that. So therefore, for the brahmacharis, it's set, it works, it's efficient, and that... The better, more you create a brahmachari ashram like that, the better they are. Then they'll focus on their service, their sadhana, their etiquette and interaction with others and all that perfectly. But if they have to worry about that, then they won't do their service nicely. Right? But for the woman, then it's got to be, have the greatest, you know, nice and have variety. It's got to have variety, because that's the meaning of opulence. Does that make sense? So it's just the way the mentality is. So that's where each of their strength is. So if that's understood, then one can create the proper facility, and one can create, one knows how to generate the interaction. Like that, because, the wife expects that the husband, he wears it, he has his white dhoti and his white shirt. She just wants that it's clean, it's not dirty, it's not looking old, it's not falling apart, it's worn nicely, like that. But, you don't look into her closet and find, five of the same kind of sari, all the same color. No, it's all different. You understand? So that's the thing. There's a difference. And if one understands the difference, that's when you actually get the experience of the interaction of the two differences. The more you try to make them the same, the less taste there is. Because what happens is if you actually want to make them the same, then the masculine has to actually take up the feminine. And they also have to, same anyway, take up the feminine in a junior position. So you can either take up the masculine position, which is superior, but submissive to the needs of the woman, or you can take up the feminine position where you are junior to the wife. Because amongst women, pecking order is, there's no question of functioning without it. Does that make sense? But in the masculine feminine, it's not a pecking order. It's like equals. But each one controls in their own way. Ultimately, where you're going and the direction and the field, that the man controls. But what you're doing with it right now, that's what the female controls. You know what I'm saying? It's like the man controls what groceries are bought, but the woman controls what you do with them. Does that make sense? It's very, very subtle.
I was just going to ask you, before I ask this question, I want to let you know that I was married for 23 years.
Okay.
And the second thing is also I might fall into the category of grumpy bachelors or grumpy vanaprast. I might possibly fall.
No, vanaprast is fine. Bachelor is another thing. Bachelor, he's still... See, the vanaprasta means he's not involved, he's not interested in the family life, right? We're talking about here, you're talking about if there's no woman involved, right? So he's not interested, he's not involved, and he's not trying... Other than what just efficiently works for him in his life, that's all the more he... he needs this money to travel around. He likes this kind of luggage. He likes this kind of clothes. He uses this toothpaste. He uses that, aftershave. And as long as he has that, then like we said before, the brahmacharyasya, then he's fine. He focuses on his service. So that's it. Grihastha means he's cutting the profile, getting this and that. Hey, that would look better. And then the whole social thing based on those externals.
Okay.
You understand? That's the difference. That kind of person will have a problem because... What's to regulate it? What's to control it? I mean, so now, because the dead matter doesn't say, hey, you're neglecting me. Right? He got that fancy pen and then it just sits there. No one's saying you're neglecting me. So therefore, there's no need for him to be sensitive. Because he'll also hang out with other such bachelors who inspire each other. Hey, I got the latest this. Wow, that's cool. Yeah. Like that, but what is that is energy? What is their responsibility towards that energy? They've got the new fancy phone. What's their responsibility to deal with that phone according to the need of the phone? Nothing. So that's why if you're going to deal in that area, you need a woman to regulate that. You understand? So a man is a vanaprastha. That's fine. That's not a bachelor.
Yes.
A bachelor is someone who is... They want to play both. They want to have the freedom of not being married, but have the opportunity to be involved and get what they want from women without any responsibility. That person is dishonest.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay.
So I might fit into that category to some degree.
Okay. Whatever. So as long as it makes sense.
Yeah. The question I was going to ask is that I've listened to your classes quite a bit. And I know that you have a dead-on, you've analyzed men-woman relationships and the position of the man and the position of the woman. And everything you say is dead on, especially after being in a marriage for 23 years. I see that everything you say is dead on. But what I want to ask the question is that at some point in life, it gets exhausting.
Yes.
To play the womanly game anymore with your wife. At
right.
some point in life.
Yeah, that's called sannyas.
Yeah, and the actual example I could give, if I may, gently, you know, is that Prabhupada lived with his wife. And he probably was a great husband and a great father and all these things. And he just wanted his wife to preach with him. Prabhupada often commented that I just wanted my wife to preach with me. So in whatever way he could, he tried to engage the family in preaching. Tried to. And then finally it got to a point where he just saw that she's never going to come along with me.
Right.
No matter what I do.
Right.
You know? So the question I'm trying to assuage some guilt.
Are you sure that you want to ask me this question?
Not 100%, but you all seem to be asking this. You seem to be talking on these topics a lot.
Okay.
So who else should I ask? So the point
depends
is.
Depends what answer you want.
Okay. But the point is, there comes a time, it seems, in every marriage that the husband is trying to suggest to the wife. Either he's doing it properly according to your formula, you know, where you wait till the wife is exactly in the proper mood, and then you suggest, sweetheart, if we could go and live in Mayapur, our life would be a lot more Krishna conscious.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And the husband may even bring the wife to Mayapur, and they'll be having a wonderful life in Mayapur. But then she'll just say, forget it. I'm going back. I miss my mother.
Okay.
And there comes a point where it doesn't matter how expert you are, or how intelligent you are, or how, you know, wonderful you are, or how, whether you say it roughly or whether you say it gently, there comes a point where you see the wife just can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she just can't get it. You know, she'll never come, you know, Prabhupada got to a point, she will never come with me and preach with me. She will never do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I say it roughly, whether I say it gently, whether I beg her, whether I, you know, she'll just never, ever, ever, ever do it.
So is there a problem with that?
Yeah, is there
What's the problem?
So the problem I'm asking is...
You're saying because the Vedic culture accommodates that. It's
yeah, so then, the, yeah, so then at some point, it seems to me that at some point, it seems to me that everybody's... You know, the thing is, we're saying solid marriages. We want to keep marriages together. We want these wonderful marriages.
Right.
But at some point, it seems in a marriage where you just got to go, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. No matter what I do, no matter how I try.
Yeah, but I still don't see the problem.
Yeah, so the problem...
You know what I'm saying? In other words, what you're saying is what the Vedic culture is saying.
Yeah, so I'm saying that... What I'm saying is that the what I'm saying is that that at some point it seems no matter how intelligent or how expert a man may be.
Right. If one is focusing on what is going on, how to engage all these things in Krishna, connected to Krishna, then whatever is there in the externals of the family life, one takes that and contemplates that and brings it into the eternal, into the spiritual. Like that. So even if the family's not advancing, one can advance oneself. Because the formulas of relationship are still the same. It's just, one is indirect, one's direct. So direct's always more favorable. it's always more preferred, but indirect can also be used. So the interaction of the family can also still be used for oneself spiritually. Okay, from Ahmedabad, Pam Ho, what's the Vedic view for a woman as one's sister? It's called a relative. She is your sister, right? You have the common mother or father, right? And so she's a sister. Otherwise, Prabhupada wasn't so much into the principle of sister. You know, this thing of, what is it? The Hindi, what do they call it? Bibi. Didi is another thing, but there's another term that they mean that she's not like that, but it's it means friends. But it's a woman, but she's a friend. It's not a girlfriend like that. I don't know. It's used quite a lot before. I think it's more in the Gandhian there would be. That would element would be there. Is that Bhenji, yeah, Bhenji. Prabhupada didn't look very kindly upon that. So the element is that sister may be there and working together and this and that, but there's always going to be that masculine feminine element. So it's either going to be it's generally either a superior or inferior. Right, so the parental is superior. Your shanta is superior. Your servitorship is superior. Friendship and conjugal have the element of equal. So one has to be very, very careful there. You know, in that. So it's not recommended as a normal position. So generally within that is even if it's friends, it's going to have to be senior, junior within the friends. Right, it won't be exact equals, you know, unless, okay, it was the girl next door that you grew up with, so she was like a sister, so it's the same as growing up with a sister, then that is like a sister. But otherwise, there's always going to be a senior, a junior. It's either going to be the man's a senior, so it's more like father, daughter, teacher, student, or it's going to be the woman's more superior, so it's like mother, daughter. I mean, mother, son, or like that. Might be mother-daughter, depends on what it is, but, you know, not observably mother-daughter. Like that, because it says one sees all women other than the wife as mothers, so that means the element of sister would be more rare. It would be the commonest mother. Then Orlando. I have a question about polygamy. Bless your soul. I heard two opinions. It is illegal and should never be accepted, and second opinion is that it's okay in some countries, so we can practice there because it is Vedic. What are the real arguments for pro-polygamy or against it? Thank you. Polygamy as a principle is that, in other words, connecting more women with one man can work. More men with one woman doesn't work very well. It's very rare. We only see the more men with one woman, we see the case of Draupadi, we see the case of the Prachetas. I think there's one more example of it. So it's very rare, because in other words, the feminine principle, the masculine principle is that of an individual. The woman's nature is, it's unique, but there's common ground. Does that make sense? Just like an example would be, in a kirtan, generally you'll see men are just dancing, doing whatever. Sometimes they get together, do a little something, but otherwise not. But let us say women start to dance together. You have this huge crowd. It can be 40, 50 feet long. One woman in the front is actually leading the dancing. The woman at the back is doing the same exact movement. How does that happen? Because the ability to tone in and work is one, as long as there's something else common. Why are they able to do that? Right? Because they're dancing for Krishna. If it comes up to the point of who's dancing better, then it breaks down completely. If there's competition, it breaks down. If there's no competition, it works smoothly. But the man is always going to be an individual. Therefore, many men, one woman is always going to be a problem. But you can have many women, one man. As a principle. But that means then the man has to be very expert at dealing with the individuality of the women. In other words, the women will act as a group, but the man has to deal with them as individuals. He makes the mistake and deals with them as a group, he's finished. Like that. So that's the principle. Then, generally in most countries where it is a, Judeo-Christian, kind of culture, then they're only going to go for one. Right? So in other words, for the spiritual, it's recommended only one. So that's why that's the predominant. So that the Western culture only allows one, it's actually based on a proper principle of that spiritually it's only... Someone focusing specifically on spiritual development would tend to stick to one wife. That would be the recommendation. So it's not a bad concept. It's not a bad concept on that. But in those systems where it's there, but it still comes back to it, even if it was allowed or you could work it out. Because the problem is there's no problem in being de facto, right? Modern culture allows that. So if you're living with many, it doesn't matter. But if you're legally married, that's a problem for them. You can only marry one woman, but you can live with a whole household. You know, nobody cares. Somehow or another, you know, it doesn't make sense. But wait, you know, what to do? You know, what makes sense these days? So, but the point is to be able to actually have the ability, facility, and nature to be able to deal with it.